Let's turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. I'm going to read the first three verses. 2 Peter chapter 2, beginning with verse 1. But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. I never put a sermon together intending to talk about timely events. Which means I never get up intending to speak on current events. Every time I get up to speak, my aim is to speak on God and an unseen world. But in talking about God and the unseen, there sometimes is a connection to the seen, to the current, to the timely. Truth can have bearing on what's going on around us. And I think that's the case with our study this morning. I think there are things going on around us that reflect things I just read in 2 Peter 2, the first three verses. It's now known, for instance, that foreign nations have been actively waging war against this country for many years. They've made no bones about it. They hate us, they hate what this nation has traditionally stood for. They want to take control of this nation, and in various ways, they've been working to that end. Their goal is to win the war they've been waging without firing a shot. Now, how are they going to accomplish that? If they're not going to shoot a missile at us or invade us with an army, how are they going to take control of us without firing a shot? Well, they're going to do it by talking. And that's what they've been doing. They're going to do it by putting people to whom they've paid 30 pieces of silver into critical positions where they can talk and influence other people. They put them into classrooms, they have put them into universities, they have put them into the media, they put them into government, and simply through talking, they're not in a rush. This has been going on for a long time. There was a society early in the 20th century called the Fabian Society, whose aim was to take over this country, and their symbol was a turtle. The Fabian Society's symbol was a turtle. Fabian came from an ancient Roman general by the name of Fabius, who would win victories just by slow, careful battles that he would select to fight. He wasn't in any rush, and a turtle is never in a rush. And so our nation's been under attack for many decades now by people who have done a lot of talking about everything that's wrong, but they've convinced people to believe them, to go along with them, to agree with them. And all you have to do is to look around and see the mess we're in to realize that they've been very effective in this strategy, in this ploy. And so we're being taken over by people who are among us, but they're not of us. And that's what Peter's talking about. What happens in the world we see goes on in the world that we cannot see. And Peter is going to give a warning against that very thing happening to the people of God. The chief Christian characteristic is that Christianity, our religion, is based on fact. Peter argues that in chapter 1 of this letter. We have not believed cunningly devised fables. We believe what we saw. We believe what we heard. We believe the facts that we've been able to establish. But Christianity's chief challenge are the lies that the devil tells. Christianity is to be about fact. But the devil comes in talking, and he comes in and tells lies. The word Peter means rock. And so we have a guy who was known as Rocky, Peter, Petros, writing to us about the rock on which the church is built. On this rock I will build my church. And that rock is truth, the truth about Jesus Christ. And the reason we know it's true is because it's been corroborated. What the apostles claim has been corroborated as true. And at the end of chapter 1, one of the evidences that Peter points to confirm, to authenticate, to convince us that Christianity is true, are the prophets. Look at verse 19 again, where he says, "And so we have the prophetic word confirmed, which you do well to heed." You need to pay attention to the prophets just like you would pay attention to a light that goes on in a dark place. Prophecy is one of the primary means by which we know that our faith is true. Fulfilled prophecy is one of the means by which we are assured that the Bible is not a pack of lies, it's not a bunch of myths and fables put together, but it's true. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Someone has said, I've not done this count myself. I'm relying upon others who claim they have done the count. Someone has said, there are 330 Old Testament prophecies concerning Jesus' first coming to earth. Christ came to earth, born of a virgin in Bethlehem, lived here for about 33 years. Someone has counted, they said, of all the Old Testament prophecies that talk about His coming to earth, His time on earth, His leaving earth, they've said there are 330 of them, and every one of them has been proven true. Now, folks, nobody can make 330 guesses and they all be true. Nobody can flip a coin and for 330 times tell you if it's going to come up tails or heads and be right. That's just beyond the ability of man to accomplish. And these prophecies in the Old Testament were not broad. They were not so vague and ambiguous that you could make them out to mean almost anything you wanted them to mean. That's the way men prophesy. They make something so broad that it can mean about anything. Here's the way the Old Testament prophesies. If I said tomorrow it's going to rain, I think I would have a 50% chance of being right. Now, I'm not a mathematician. I'm not good with statistics. But I think if I said it's going to rain tomorrow, I'd have a 50% chance of being right. Like flipping a coin. If I said the rain is going to start tomorrow at exactly 9 a.m., now, that's less than 50% that I'll be right. And again, I'm not sure what the percentage drops to if I say the rain will start tomorrow at 9 a.m. For the sake of argument, let me say I've got a 1 in 24 chance of being right, since there's 24 hours in the day. A 1 in 24 is a whole lot less than a 1 in 2, 50%. But then if I said, not only is the rain going to start at exactly 9 a.m. tomorrow, it is going to end exactly at 2 p.m. I have no idea what the odds are then. When the Old Testament made prophecies, the Old Testament didn't say it's going to rain tomorrow. The Old Testament said it's going to rain tomorrow. It'll start at this time. It will end at that time. It may even throw in some other complications. That's the way Old Testament prophecy was. And every prophecy was fulfilled exactly like it was predicted. Nobody denies that. If there was an obvious Old Testament prophecy that was not fulfilled. Don't you believe the skeptics and the atheists and everybody else? That'd be all they'd talk about. Well, you can't trust your Bible because it said this would happen and that didn't happen. Deuteronomy chapter 18. There are going to be prophets coming among you. How do we know if they're a true prophet or a false prophet? If they prophesy something and it doesn't come to pass, they are a false prophet. That's how you know. Peter starts out by saying there were false prophets among the people. Jeremiah told the Jews, you're going to be in captivity for 70 years. There was a guy by the name of Hananiah said, Jeremiah is wrong. It's only going to be 2 years. Jeremiah said, Hananiah, you're going to be sorry you ever said that. God is going to deal with you because you're lying. Now, the Jews at that time didn't know whom to believe, but 2 years later they knew whom to believe. After 2.5 years at least, they knew Hananiah was lying, and God had already dealt with him by then. That's why Old Testament prophecy is so valuable. True prophecy is beyond the ability of man to do. Now, man can make educated guesses. Men can even make lucky guesses. But men cannot prophesy. They cannot predict what's going to happen. And so at the end of chapter 1, Peter talks about the authenticating value of prophecy to convince us that our faith is based on fact. It's based on truth. It is based on rock. Peter says there were false prophets back then. You're going to have false teachers. A prophet was someone who claimed God was speaking through him. A teacher is someone who says, no, God isn't speaking through me, but I understand what God says. A teacher is someone who says, you can trust my interpretation, my explanation of what God has said. We ought to listen to God, but sometimes he's hard to understand. I'll explain to you what he means. That's what a teacher claims. Here's what God said. Here's what it means. Peter said there are going to be people who show up in the church who claim they can tell you what God means when he said this, when he said that. They can explain it. You can trust them. You can believe them. But they're lying. They are false prophets. And you're not to be deceived by them. Now, in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11, Paul says we're not to be ignorant of the devil's devices. We need to understand how the devil operates. And that's what Peter's talking about in chapter 2. He wants us to know how the devil, who is waging war against us, Christians are always in a fight. We're called to fight the good fight. We're called to be a good soldier of Jesus Christ. We're called to put on the armor of God. We have always got an enemy, even if it's not Russia or China. We've always got an enemy. And he is stalking us. Chapter 5, verse 8. He's on the prowl. He walks about. God says to Satan, what are you doing here? Where have you been, Satan? Well, I've been walking up and down to and fro. I've been prowling. I've been stalking. And Peter wants us to know how the devil is trying to worm his way into this church and into every church, how he's trying to take over the kingdom of God. Now, Peter in chapter 5 talks about shepherds. Shepherds have sheep, they have flocks. What Peter is saying here is don't let anybody pull the wool over your eyes because there are wolves in sheep's clothing. And you need to be able to spot them. You need to have the critical thinking skills and the observational powers that when a wolf tries to sneak in here dressed like a sheep, you can spot him. And so we're going to talk from 2 Peter 2, beginning this morning, not ending this morning, but beginning this morning, about how the devil will try to take over this church, how he'll try to take over any church. I want to talk about 3 points. I want to talk about the satanic sin. how it all starts. I want to talk about the satanic strategy, how it proceeds, and then talk about the satanic sequel, how it will all end. The satanic sin is denial. The satanic scheme are his devices, his deviousness. The satanic sequel is destruction. So let's talk about the first point. The satanic sin. What's the basic sin of the false teacher? Well, I read it right there in verse 1. Denying the Lord who bought them. There will be false teachers among you who will deny the Lord who bought them. Now, it's interesting to me that Peter uses this word deny because, like we talked about last week, what was Peter best known for in the Gospels? Well, he was known for saying, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." But he was also known for saying, "I'll never deny you." And then he goes right out and he does it three times. So here's a man who knows something about denying the Lord. And yet Christ said, "I want you to go out and strengthen your brethren. I want you to feed my sheep." And in instructing the sheep, us, Peter says, "You be on the lookout for deniers, for people who will deny the Lord that bought them." Satan is Satan because he is a denier of the Lord. That doesn't mean he denies the existence of God. That's not how he denies. He tips his hand the very first time he appears in the Bible as to how he operates. He shows up in the Garden of Eden and he asks the woman, Eve, "Has God said you can't eat of these trees?" "Oh no, God didn't say that. God said we can eat of every tree that's in this garden except one." And the devil said, "Oh, that's what he said? Well, he didn't mean it." That's how the devil denies. That's the original sin. He may have said it. I'm not arguing with you about what he said. But he didn't mean it. Peter talks about that incident that we know is the Mount of Transfiguration. And Peter even quotes something he heard there on the Mount when the voice of God spoke out of the cloud and said, "This is my beloved Son." Now, interesting to me, Peter doesn't complete the sentence. Peter doesn't give us the next thing God said because maybe he thought everybody already knew it. "This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. Hear ye Him." You listen to Him. And the devil shows up and says, "What did you hear from God? What did He say?" "Well, He said this." "Oh, He did? Well, He didn't mean it." And Eve believed him. Listen, I am not ever going to get on Eve too badly. Yes, what she did was sin. But her sin wasn't like Adam's sin. No one had ever lied to Eve before. Everything she had been told before was absolutely true. She had no reason to be distrusting or on guard. I'm not going to be too harsh on her. I will be harsh on Adam. By one man, sin entered the world. But Eve believed the lie. Well, God said that. He said, God said, "In the day we eat it, we'll die." Oh, He doesn't mean that. You'll not die. You'll be as gods, knowing good and evil. Now, that's how the devil denies. Let me ask you to turn to Acts chapter 7, verse 35. Acts 7, verse 35. Because the word translated deny, denying the Lord who bought them, shows up in Acts 7, verse 35. And here's what the verse says, talking about the Jews. "Moses, whom they refused." saying, who made you a ruler and judge over Moses, whom they refused? That's the same word translated denying the Lord who bought them. Well, God said this, but he doesn't mean it. They refused the clear implication, the clear statement of what God said. When God says yes and someone says no, that's denying the Lord. When God says this and someone says no, that's denying the Lord. False teachers in their teaching deny the Lord when they say the opposite of what the Lord says. And I'll show you in a minute why saying the opposite is so popular. That's coming up. But that's the satanic sin, to deny the Lord, to say he didn't mean it, to say yes when he says otherwise, to loose what he's bound, to bind what he's loosed. That's how the devil starts. Now, how does the devil then proceed? What's his style? What are his devices? Peter mentions six of them. You can mark them as we go through the text. First off, verse 1. False teachers. He works with the leadership. Now, sometimes Satan works from the bottom up, but often he works from the top down. He works on those who are supposed to be the most knowledgeable, the most articulate, the most eloquent, the most congenial. You know, when we look for a preacher, we want someone who knows the book. We want someone who can talk. We want someone who can put sentences together. And Satan often works from that sort of individual. And Romans 16:18 says that with smooth words and fair speeches, he can deceive the hearts of the simple. I ought to be under more scrutiny as far as what I say than anybody else in this auditorium. Be not many of you teachers, James says, knowing that you'll receive the greater condemnation. When you purport to speak for God, to explain what God means, you better make sure you got it right. And so he begins at the top, often. He begins with the leadership. And then the word number two, second characteristic, those who are among you. There were false prophets among the people. There will be false teachers among you. It's bad enough when the enemy is outside the walls. It's always worse when the enemy is on the inside. Acts 20, 29 to 30. Paul says, savage wolves are going to enter in. They're going to come into this flock from among your own selves. He's speaking to the Ephesian eldership. From among your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things. And elders as well as preachers ought to be under scrutiny. Those who are among us, those we know, those whom we trust, those whom we socialize with, are friends with, is where Satan often works. Thirdly, he works by stealth. You've heard of our stealth weapons. We've got these airplanes, ships, tanks that can avoid radar. Radar doesn't pick them up. They operate by stealth. Who will secretly, false teachers among you, who will secretly bring in their destructive heresies. They operate secretly, undercover. They are covert. They try to smuggle their error in. Now, the substance of what they're smuggling is a lie, denying the Lord who bought them. They're destructive heresy. The word heresy is simply the Greek word that means to choose, to make a choice. That's all. A heretic is someone who's made a choice, but we've used that word to talk about those who have made the wrong choices. So a heretic is someone who's chosen the wrong thing to believe. Now, let me make a distinction here about what a false teacher is. A false teacher is not someone who believes something that's not true. If that's all it takes to be a false teacher, we're all in that category, unless everything you believe about everything in the Bible is true. Now, I'm smart enough not to be that stupid to tell you everything I believe is gospel truth, that I've got it right, you can trust me, you can count on. No, I'm as liable to making a mistake as anybody. A false teacher is not someone who's mistaken about truth. Have you ever heard of an umpire being accused of being a liar? Ball, when it catches the corner and he calls it a ball. And you got the TV now on it. Yeah, it was 2 inches outside, but he calls it 2 inches inside, he calls it a ball. Nobody calls him a liar. They call him mistaken. You made a mistake. You didn't get it right. There may be lots of subjects on which I've not and am not getting it right. I hope that doesn't make me a false teacher. A false teacher is someone who's not mistaken. They are someone who is attacking the authority of Jesus Christ. There's someone who's thrown the rule book out. I'm not going to call balls and strikes by the rule book. I'm going to call them by how I feel. I'm going to be the authority. That's the false teacher. The man who is trying to destroy faith in Jesus Christ. He's the false teacher. I think you can be wrong on a lot of things. I bet in any assembly of God's people, you have folks who differ on, say, how many children, believing children, a man must have to be an elder. On whether the Holy Spirit literally or indirectly indwells in the believer. And on and on. When was the book of Revelation written? Is it talking about Jerusalem or Rome? You know, all kinds of things on which brethren can differ, yet we're not false teachers. We may be misunderstanding something, but we're not false teachers. But the ones Peter is talking about are those who are smuggling in destructive heresies. Look back to chapter 1, verse 16. Peter says, "We have not followed cunningly devised fables." The word translated cunningly devised is the Greek word for wisdom. We're not trying to bring in fiction that looks real. We're not passing along things we've made up, fables, and trying to convince you it's fact. False teachers are trying to make us believe as fact something they have made up. Let me give you one reference. Turn to Colossians 2. I'll just give you one reference. I've got to keep my eye on the clock here. But in Colossians 2, look at the very last verse, verse 23. Paul, in Colossians 2, talks about four types of false teachers. The philosopher, the legalist, the mystic, and the dogmatist. The dogmatist, verses 20 to 23, is the man who it's my way or the highway. You're going to do it the way I say or you're out. That's the dogmatist. And in verse 23, Paul says about these men, they indeed have an appearance of wisdom. What they're saying sounds good. It makes sense. I can see why they're saying it. But Paul goes on to say, what they're really promoting is self-imposed religion, false humility, and so on. That does nothing to help you in your fight against sin. So the false teacher, whatever he's pushing, he's always going to make it sound like it's the real deal. Number 5, verse 2. What he pushes is going to be shameful. Many will follow their destructive, pernicious, shameful, some versions translate. Many will follow their shameful ways. This is the word down in verse 7 translated filthy. You see that? Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. Here's the key. Why are false teachers so popular? Why is what they say so popular? Because what they say is saying to you, you can do whatever you want to do and God is okay with it. No, there's one tree we can't eat. Oh, no, you can eat it. It's okay. No, there's something I shouldn't do. I shouldn't commit adultery. I shouldn't fornicate. I shouldn't take drugs. I shouldn't be an alcoholic. Oh, no. You can do all of that. And it's okay. That's the insidiousness of Satan. He convinces people that what they want to do is really okay. God isn't going to make you die. And the day you eat thereof, you shall surely die. No, you won't. You're not going to die. Do what you want to do, no matter how filthy and disgusting and shameful. And do what you want to do, and God's okay with it. And people like hearing that. That's why false teachers are effective. That's why they're supported. That's why they're popular. They'll let you do what you want to do. And Peter concludes there in verse 3 saying, now what they're doing, their motive, their ulterior motive behind what they're doing is, they are exploiting you. They're making merchandise of you. The King James says, by covetousness, they will exploit you. A false teacher looks at you and he looks at me as nothing but a commodity to be bought and traded for him to make money on. He's promoting his own agenda. And the agenda that he's promoting here, according to Peter, is covetousness. By covetousness, they will exploit you. Paul, in Colossians 3, says that covetousness, the love of money, is idolatry. A false teacher is a false teacher because he serves a different God. He's not mistaken about something the true God has said. He's not simply misunderstanding something. He is promoting a true, a false God. They love money. They love power. They love popularity. And to you, you are nothing but a commodity. And they'll let you do whatever you want to do. And people hear that and they say, sign me up. And what's the end of it all? What's the sequel to the false teacher coming in, doing his thing, and people believing him? Verse 3, destruction. Peter keeps talking about destruction. Destructive heresies bring on themselves swift destruction. Their destructive ways. Their judgment has not been idle and their destruction does not slumber. Psalm 121 says God doesn't go to sleep. God's always awake. He sees everything that's going on. He knows what's happening. And He is going to destroy those who destroyed faith in Him, those who led people away from Him, He is going to destroy them. I like the old King James. The King James says damnable heresies. Destruction, destructive, isn't strong enough for what Peter's talking about. He's talking about something that is as bad can be. It's damnable. It's a word used in various places to talk about this is it, you've lost it. There's no chance. If this happens to you, there's just no chance for any recovery, for any reclamation. So, Christians need to recognize we're at war. We need to recognize there's an enemy who's trying to do to us what he did to our parents in the Garden of Eden. He's trying to make us believe we can live any way we want and God's okay with it. And He doesn't want us to think about what's going to happen. Fire and brimstone, the lake of fire prepared for the devil and his angels. He doesn't want us to think about the fact we can join Him there. You see, judgment is inevitable. It is not inescapable. There's going to be a day of judgment, but you and I can avoid it. If we'll put our faith in God and honor Him as Lord and be obedient to Him and not let a false teacher convince us that you can get to heaven without being a Christian in your heart, then we've hope and the promise of grace and the promise of mercy. And the day of judgment is not going to be something we have to worry about.